cracked lid of a shoebox.
You just shot that thing in a moving vehicle in a public parking lot,
Zeth muses, running his tongue over his teeth.
The powers that be don't tend to like that kind of shit, and I'm betting they're on their way here as we speak. I suspect I might be doing you a favor by taking it off your hands, Cameron.
Dad narrows his eyes suspiciously at the guy.
How do you know my name?
Zeth huffs in a bored manner, staring off into the dark stretch of forest on the other side of the parking lot.
Better for you if you just hand it over, friend. I'd hate to have to take it from you.
A knot of worry tightens in my stomach. Give it to him.
Silver.
Just give him the gun, Dad. Please. Let's get rid of it and get the hell out of here. Dad looks at me like I've lost my fucking mind, but he gingerly steps forward and hands over the weapon, placing it in Zeth's outstretched hand.
Good man. Now get your daughter home before 5-0 shows up.
Dad stabs his finger after the truck.
That bastard was trying to hurt her. We need to report that to the police.
A terrifying smile spreads across Zeth's face.
I think you're better off leaving that matter in my hands, too. Don't you think, Silver?
I say nothing, but as we drive away, Dad following closely behind me, chattering incessantly on the phone to keep me occupied, I think it to myself. Yeah, maybe the whole Jacob situation would be better off being dealt with by a man like Zeth.
31. Alex. The sound of shattering glass fills the air. On the other side of the altar, the name given to the bar by the Rock's most loyal patrons, Pauly, the bartender, blanches at the very sight of me, the glass he just dropped lying in pieces on the polished mahogany in front of him. Alex, he says nervously.
Where have you been, man? Monty was planning on sending out a search party soon.
Yeah, I'll bet he was. It really was only a matter of time before Monty came looking for me. I've relied on his arrogance up until now, knowing that the bastard expects me to come crawling to him for forgiveness, but that plan had a shelf life. At some point, he would have gotten tired of waiting and sent someone out to drag me back here by the scruff of my neck like the misbehaving stray dog that I am. You know you were planning on swinging by? Pauly's voice is abnormally high-pitched. He's freaking the hell out because he likes me. He's a friend, and he knows I've just strolled on into the lion's den without a thought as to what was going to happen once the door swung shut behind me. But I have given it thought. Plenty. I know exactly what I'm gonna do and how, and Monty's gonna sit there like a good little boy and listen to me while I speak. Don't worry, dude, I tell Pauly. I got this covered. I head for the door through to the back, but Pauly calls out after me. Hey, hold up. You're probably gonna need this. He moves quickly, sloshing some amber liquid into a glass, which he slides down the bar toward me. The shot glass comes to a stop a foot away. I down the raw tequila, the puts hairs on your chest kind, wincing at the heat that burns all the way down my throat. I then place the glass back down on the bar upside down. Thanks, man. I'd say yell if you need me, but... I smile tightly, nodding. Yeah, I'm on my own with this one. There's nothing Pauly can do for me without getting his ass fired or shot. No worries. Like I said, I've got this covered. Unusually, the door to Monty's office is yawning wide open, throwing light out into the dark corridor. I stop in the doorway, leaning against the jamb, watching with mild interest as Monty scrambles around on his hands and knees inside, looking for something on the floor. He goes rigid when he sees my Stan Smiths in the doorway. Without hinging back, he laughs gruffly, letting his head hang down between his shoulders.
Wondering when you were gonna develop some balls, he says.
His voice is light, but also edged with acid. When he sits back, he's brandishing a dagger-sharp smile that makes me wish I'd brought a knife with me, too. He gets to his feet, whatever he was looking for on the floor forgotten about.
Come on in, kid. We've got some stuff to talk about, you and me.
I hate that my heart rate kicks up a notch. Thankfully, it doesn't show on my face or the way I hold myself. I developed the ability to hide my thoughts and feelings a long time ago, when I was just another unwilling participant in the foster care system. I sink down on the chair I always sit in, opposite Monty's. The old man watches me like a hawk as he takes a seat himself. So fucking stupid. I could have caved in the back of his fucking skull while he was scrabbling around on the floor just now if I'd come here for that.
I gotta say, I'm a little hurt, Alex.
He leans an elbow against his desk, propping his chin up on a fist. He looks like a bored student, only half paying attention in class.
You and me, I thought we were friends.
I slouch back into the chair, shoving my hands into the pockets of my leather jacket. That makes two of us. Looks like we were both wrong, huh? Monty pulls a sour face.
What the hell's that supposed to mean? You forget. I helped you, kid. I made sure you weren't dumped in another foster home. I gave you a place to live, didn't I?
Sure, but you didn't do it out of the kindness of your heart. You saw an opportunity and you took it. I rub a hand at the back of my neck. That first day when I asked you why you were helping me, you said you owed my father a debt and helping me was how you were going to settle it. I guess you were telling the truth, but when you said debt, you really meant revenge, didn't you? Monty's eyes narrow to slits. Giacomo fucked you over. He left you to rot in prison while he disappeared off to Mexico or wherever and got fat on good food, booze, and women. So when you saw his son was close by, within reach, and you could just reach out and take him, I cant my head to one side, arching an eyebrow. Feel free to stop me if I'm getting any of this wrong. Monty flashes me his teeth.
Costa Rica.
What?
Costa Rica. While I was rotting in prison, your dickless father was living it up in Costa Rica. Did he tell you he got married again? I'm not 100% on the dates, but I'm pretty sure your mother was still alive then. I suppose Jack figured if he was in a different country, then getting a divorce wasn't really important.
My hatred for Giacomo was a bottomless well before. I didn't think it could get any deeper. Turns out I was wrong. He married another woman while my mother was still alive? Fuck's sake. Marshaling my expression, I make sure Monty doesn't know that this little piece of information has affected me as much as it has. So Jack was 1,000 miles away getting laid in the sun. When you got out of prison, he was still in the wind. And then I show up, out of the blue, like some sort of gift-wrapped godsend, just begging for you to swoop in and manipulate me, getting me on side. What was the plan, Monty? Were you gonna steal me? Was I supposed to worship you like the father I never had? Or was I supposed to trust you implicitly, think you only have my best interests at heart, and then you were gonna drag me in front of Giacomo and plaster my brains all over his living room wall just to spite him? Monty laughs, shrugging carelessly.
Honestly, I didn't really give it that much thought. I suppose I would have done whatever hurt your father the most. Trouble is, Giacomo found out you were working for me pretty quick, and I'm gonna let you in on a little secret now, just between you and me, okay?
He cups his hand around his mouth, leaning closer to me, whispering like we're co-conspirators.
He didn't really care.
Now this isn't a surprise to me. I don't need to master my emotions this time because it's no less than I expected. Yes, Giacomo wants to steal me back from Monty now. Whatever half-baked plan he's cooking up to start his own chapter of the Dreadnoughts involves me in some way, but it isn't because my father cares about me. It's because he needs something from me. I haven't figured out what that could be yet, but I'm sure it'll become obvious sooner or later. He's probably got a cirrhotic liver, and he needs half of mine, for Christ's sake. If that's the case, then he's going to be sorely out of luck. I wouldn't piss on that man if he was on fire. If you're expecting me to burst into tears, then I'm gonna have to disappoint you, I say, rocking back on my chair. Don't you know me by now? I couldn't give two shits if Giacomo didn't break his neck in his race to Raleigh to come save me from you. Monty thinks about this. He scratches at his chin, worrying at his stubble.
Let me ask you something, Alex. You think that girlfriend of yours would look pretty sliding up and down a pole out there?
I prefer my girls to be a little curvier, but your Silver's got that doe-eyed, innocent look about her. He pauses, waiting for my reaction. I'm willing to bet he's already getting ready to yank open the top drawer of his desk so he can grab the gun that he keeps there. I'd be a fool to explode on him, even if his question has got my blood simmering. Chewing on the inside of my cheek, I meet his gaze, adamant that I won't be the first to look away. You have a lot of stupid people working for you, Monty. Like, a lot of stupid people. Bemused, he taps his index finger against his desk. Is that so? I think you like them that way, to be honest. Stupid people don't think for themselves. They don't ask questions because they're too dumb to think of them. They don't plan ahead either. Me, though? I'm not stupid. I have plenty of questions, but I'm smart enough not to ask them. I compile them, one after the other, and I spend a considerable amount of time hunting down the answers on my own time. And yeah, I plan ahead. Way, way, way ahead. My hand is already closed around the thumb drive in my jacket pocket. Slowly I take it out, laying it down on the desk in front of me, keeping my hand pressed down on top of it. Monty waves his hand in a derisive gesture. What's that supposed to be? This is a record of every time you've ever asked me to do something for you. Dates, times, the amount you paid me, the people you asked me to hurt. It's a pretty damning dossier, really. Or it would be if it fell into the wrong hands.
Kid. You have no idea how bad fire burns, do you? You play with shit like this and you're bound to get hurt.
Monty shakes his head, a broad smile taking over his face, his eyes bowed into crescents. He looks at me askance, drilling into me with his faded blue irises, and I can see just how badly I've irritated him.
That doesn't prove anything. You realize that, right? Anyone can make up a list of names and dates.
But when those names and dates lead down dark alleyways to bags filled with blow and smack, things begin to get interesting, don't they? I counter. I'm not sure which department to take this to first. The DEA seemed to have taken leave of their minds, but maybe the ATF would be interested in the contents of this thumb drive. Could be the regular cops would like to know this stuff. How many times has the sheriff come sniffing around this place looking for something to hang you over?
You're not very smart at all if you can't see that that information hangs you as well as me, boy.
I roll my eyes, groaning loudly. I'm a fucking minor, asshole, and you are technically still my legal guardian. Coercion's a real thing. What judge is going to prosecute a kid that some wannabe crime lord snatched out of the hands of CPS to use as his own personal whipping boy? Monty does the math on this. I watch as he runs the numbers and weighs in his head how likely it'll be that I will walk away from all of this unscathed. With my record and the fact that I recently fucking shot someone, the odds aren't exactly in my favor. There's a chance that I'm right, though. Either way, even if I do go down or I don't, Monty knows that my testimony and the information on this thumb drive pretty much guarantees that he'll be looking at some hardcore jail time.
You want to go back inside because of another Moretti, Montgomery? I ask, tapping the end of the thumb drive against his desk.
If looks could start fires and bring about the end of the world, then I would be facing down the apocalypse as Monty scowls at me from across his precious fucking desk.
What the hell do you want, kid? He hisses.
Oh, this is an easy one. I already have my demands prepared. No fallout for handing over the bag, for me or Silver, or Silver's dad, or anyone else.
And
you figure out how to get Xander cut from the dreadnoughts.
Why the hell would he want to leave the club?
Does it matter?
I suppose not.
Lastly, I want your help.
Jesus, kid, your asking price is getting kind of steep,
Monty growls. I'm pretty sure you'll be happy to lend a hand with this part, I tell him, rolling my eyes. I want Giacomo gone. I want him out of Raleigh. Preferably out of Washington. I don't care if he winds up behind bars or in the fucking ground, I just want him gone. Monty sucks on his teeth.
You'd X out your own father?
I'll kill anyone who poses a threat to Silver, Monty, and that includes you. Now pick up that cell phone of yours, boss. I believe you've got some calls to make.
Made it out alive. Gotta say, I'm impressed.
I told Xander to stay in the car, but I honestly expected him to have vanished by the time I came back outside. He's never been very good at doing what he was told. However, when I head back to the Camaro, he's sitting in the driver's seat, racking up a monster of a joint on his lap.
Move, I command. I'm an excellent driver. Why don't you just relax and I'll...
He stops talking when he glances up and sees the look on my face.
Fuck's sake.
Mumbling to himself, he slides across the bench to the passenger side, careful not to dump out his weed in the footwell.
You're a walking cliche, Moretti. A teenaged bad boy who doesn't let anyone else drive his muscle car? Come on, you're better than that. Don't be so fucking obvious.
I let Silver drive my car, I reply, slamming the car door behind me. I'd let Cam drive it too, probably.
Then why can't I?
Because it amuses me to fuck with you, I answer, snatching the joint he's just finished rolling from his hands and pinching it between my teeth. Light, I say, holding out my hand. Xander slaps his Zippo into my open palm. The weed hits hard, a pleasant numbness traveling down the back of my neck as I hold it in my lungs for a second. It's been nearly a year since I smoked pot, but the comfortable buzz feels both familiar and enjoyable. One toke's all I need, though. I pass the joint back to Xander, exhaling twin jets of smoke down my nose.
Should I assume that your dad's no longer a concern?
Xander asks, his voice muffled by the thickness of the smoke in the back of his throat. Starting the Camaro's engine, I slam my foot down on the gas pedal, peeling out of the parking lot. He's still going to be a problem, so will Monty one way or another. I figure I've bought myself some time, though. Oh, and by the way, you're no longer a dreadnought. I can feel Xander staring at me.
What the hell are you talking about?
You're done with them, and you're done with Raleigh. Time you went back to Bellingham, man. No sense in both of us being caught up in this bullshit. Xander's going to object. I'm prepared for it. But he's barely shaped the sound of his first no fucking way, man, when a black truck with tinted windows comes hurtling around the corner toward us. For a split second, we're both on the same side of the road. The tinted out windows hide the unquestionable surprise of the driver behind the wheel. I have nowhere to go. The only thing between the Camaro and the 40-foot drop into the ravine beside the road is an already dented guardrail. It won't hold us if we hit it. We'll go straight over the side and tumble down the sharp slope, rolling every time the car bounces off the rock face. Somehow, inside the smallest fragment of time, an eighth of a second, no more, I understand how Ben felt right before Jackie went careening off the road. My language is a little more colorful, but I'm sure his thoughts were exactly the same, too. Man, I really don't want to fucking die. The black truck swerves, struggling to get back on its side of the road in time. It makes it, but only just. The murdered-out vehicle clips the Camaro's wing mirror, ripping it off the car, sending it bouncing down the road behind us in a shower of twisted metal and shattered glass.
God damn! Xander yells at the top of his lungs. What the fuck?
My hands are shaking, and it feels like my heart's about to burst, but I manage to keep on driving.
Do you see him? I say through my clenched teeth.
Xander doesn't need to ask what I'm talking about. He nods, bracing himself against the dashboard as he leans forward, taking in an uneven breath.
The bullet holes? Two of them, right in the middle of the door. Kind of hard to miss.
Back in 2014, Raleigh was voted number one safest town to live in all of Washington State. Harry has the newspaper clipping framed on the wall at the diner to prove it. Monty might have been cultivating his little criminal empire here for a while now, but he's low-key about it. Most of Raleigh's residents have never even seen Montgomery Cohen III's face. This isn't the kind of town where trucks speed around corners on the wrong side of the road, shot up with bullet holes. No. This, somehow, someway, is related to me. It's then that I notice the missed calls from Silver.
32. Silver. I barely have any nails left by the time Alex finally shows up at the house. Xander's not with him anymore, probably dropped off at Salt and Ash Trailer Park. The Camaro's tires kick up gravel and old snow as Alex burns up the driveway. He parks next to the Nova, not even bothering to kill the engine before he jumps out of the driver's seat and races to the porch steps to the house, where I've been sitting out in the cold, waiting for him.
You okay? You hurt?
His hands are frantic, patting me down, searching out hidden injuries. I've already told him via text that I'm okay, but obviously he needs to check for himself. I'm fine. I'm okay, I promise. Nothing actually happened. I was just scared, that's all. Dad. God, if Dad hadn't come and met me. Alex's expression hardens, his nostrils flaring.
Where is he?
In the kitchen. Alex nods, getting up and heading inside. I follow him in, already prepping my speech about how neither Alex nor my father are allowed to go off half-cocked on some stupid bring-down-Jacob-Weaving plan again. It was sheer luck that neither of them ended up shot by one of Caleb Weaving's security guards last time. Alex doesn't even make the suggestion, though. Dad keeps his hard liquor in the cupboard above the oven. When he sees us coming down the hallway, he takes an extra 2 lowball glasses out and sets them down next to the one he's already taken out for himself. Alex prowls up and down the length of the kitchen, brushing his hands through his hair over and over again, as Dad decants a double shot of whiskey into each glass. When Dad gives Alex a glass, he grunts out a thanks and knocks the amber liquid back in one go. Dad takes Alex's glass away and hands him the half-full bottle instead.
It's official. I'm the worst parent in the world, he says. I must be the only father in the state of Washington who lets his underage daughter drink fucking Brooke Laddick.
I take the glass he offers me, wincing down a sip of the whiskey, feeling a little better as the alcohol blazes a path down my throat.
I'm putting the house on the market. We're moving to Chicago, Dad mutters. It's safer in fucking Illinois than it is here.
Alex laughs, the sound brittle and harsh.
They're not kicking us out of Raleigh, Cam. None of us. This has always been your home. It's my home now, too.
He laces his fingers together behind the back of his head, interlocking them at the base of his skull.
This can't go on forever. The cops are gonna find something else on Jake, and he's gonna get sent down again. My father's gonna disappear. Monty's gonna scrub me from his memory. Everything's gonna go back to normal. The end.
I think it hits him at the same time it hits me. All of this madness and chaos is the norm. Things have been this way, fraught with danger and heartbreak, for a long time now. It'd be unusual if life settled down and things actually stopped falling apart. He rubs his face with both hands, sighing out a long, unhappy breath.
You were a badass, shooting after that truck man, he says through his fingers. Good thing you gave Zeth that gun, though. He's unpredictable. I've heard too much about him to think he's not tapped in the head.
My dad picks up a butter knife from the kitchen counter and distractedly digs the blunt blade into the pad of his thumb. He'd been making a sandwich earlier when I called him in a panic, and now there's a pool of melted butter on the chopping board.
This is gonna sound pretty rude, he says,
staring sightless out of the window that overlooks the Walker Forest.
But I'm honest to God looking forward to the day you both leave for college. At least then I'll only have to worry about you getting wasted and flunking your exams like everyone else.
33. Silver.
So, you two are a regular Bonnie and Clyde power couple, huh?
Zeth eyes the whipped cream-topped strawberry milkshake sitting on the table in front of him with a level of malevolence that should have shattered the glass by now. He's wearing a plain black sweater with a tiny hole in the neck, worn jeans, a pair of black boots. Nothing about the way he's dressed sets him apart from the weekend lunch crowd at Harry's, but the energy radiating off him is powerful enough to make the people in the booths surrounding us subconsciously all lean away from him without realizing it. Like Alex, there's a sharp-edged, wicked kind of electricity to him that makes people nervous. Beside me, Alex dumps yet another sugar into his coffee, viciously clanging the spoon around inside his mug as he stirs. I already know he isn't going to drink the piping hot black liquid. He takes his coffee black. The empty sugar packets, discarded on the table next to the laminated Harry's menu, are a sign of his agitation.
"For the record, I think this is a terrible idea," Alex growls unhappily.
Seth sighs down his nose, slouching back into the bench seat on his side of the booth.
"Agreed. I had a date with an 18-month-old.
I vaguely remember Dr. Romero mentioning that she had a kid. Can't seem to wrap my head around the fact that this guy might be someone's father, though. He seems too hard, too distant. I'd say I can't imagine him changing a baby's diaper, but I totally can. He'd have the job done quickly, with frightening efficiency, in under 5 seconds flat.
"I can handle this weaving situation myself," Alex says. "I don't have a problem putting the motherfucker down."
Zeth's mouth twitches. I think it's a sign that he's amused.
"You already shot the kid once. You have a list of motives to bury the bastard longer than your arm. The cops would have you in cuffs before you could blink, and your girl doesn't want you locked up for the rest of your life. Am I right?"
He's hit the nail on the head. There's no way Alex can be the one to take down Jake with the cops already watching him like a hawk. He'll be the first person they suspect, no matter what, and they'll throw the book at him this time. He's on very thin ice as far as the law is concerned. It won't take much for Alex to wind up with a lengthy prison sentence on his hands. His life will effectively be over. Still, he's absolutely hating this. Like, hating it. In an attempt to break the staring contest that's taking place between Alex and Zeth, I gingerly ask, "How much do you normally get paid for this kind of thing anyway, Mr., Mayfair?" Zeth's eyes glide over to me, cool and assessing.
"I have no idea what this kind of thing is, Miss Parisi. I run a boxing gym in Seattle. If you're asking how much the monthly membership fee is, then our prices are available on our website."
"You have a website?" He huffs out a solitary laugh.
"Huh, no. No, we do not." "Why are you even still here?" Alex asks. "You got your bag back. You have a life in Seattle by the sounds of things. Isn't it time you were thinking about leaving town?"
Zeth's eyes come alive with interest as he sits up and leans closer to us across the table.
"You thinking about running me out of Raleigh, kid? You should make up your mind. One second you want me to kill someone for you, the next, you want me gone. I don't deal well with mixed signals."
I look around nervously, hoping to God no one heard him just say that. "Maybe we shouldn't talk about killing people," I hiss. "No one said anything about killing anyone." Zeth casually leans back, slouching in his seat again.
"So, you just want me to break a couple of bones? Knock out some of his teeth? Put the fear of God into him?"
His tone is mocking. "We want to know about the deal Jacob's father made with the DEA," I say. "We want to figure out a way to make sure Jake's punished for all the terrible shit he's done. Legally." Zeth pulls the straw out of his milkshake, wiping the pink cream from it on his napkin, then slides it into his mouth. He chews on the end of it thoughtfully.
"Could tickle him too, if you like."
Oh God, this is not going well. "Look, you were the one who said I was better off leaving the Jacob situation to you when you took that gun from my dad earlier." I wait, studying his face, watching for some sign of emotion, but none appears.
"I did say that, didn't I?"
If you're just gonna be unhelpful and rude, then Alex is right. You probably should just go.
"Easy, sweetheart. Easy now."
Zeth pulls the straw out of his mouth and uses it to point at me.
"Would you call in a demolitions expert to knock down a partition wall?"
Probably not.
"I'm not the kind of guy you hire to accomplish what you're looking to accomplish, sweetheart. I'm definitely not the kind of guy you hire to accomplish things legally, either. But that's all irrelevant, because I didn't come here to be interviewed. I'm not looking for work. Like I said, I run a boxing gym in Seattle."
I'm glad we're in public. If we weren't, I'm pretty sure Alex would try and kill this guy. He's turned a threatening shade of purple.
"We're wasting our time, Argento. Come on, let's get the fuck out of here." No need to get bent out of shape, Zeth quips. I have a personal interest where the DEA is concerned. This Lowell guy. What do you know about him?
Alex sets his jaw. That he's an asshole who's probably gonna wind up dead. The DEA are the ones prosecuting Caleb Weaving, but this guy's trying to clear Jake's name. He wants to discredit Silver. I think he has links to my father, too.
Zeth shrugs a shoulder, turning his head to look out at the unfriendly, wet night on the other side of the window. Down Main Street, the trees, still trussed up with sparkling Christmas lights, sway and shake as the wind howls toward the north.
Wherever Giacomo Moretti goes, trouble soon follows, he says mildly. If Jack's around and there's a bad smell in the air, it's a safe bet that he's causing the stink.
Zeth inhales, abruptly turning back to face us. His eyes flicker first to me, and then to Alex, and then he's on his feet, pulling a wallet out of his jeans pocket.
All right, then.
He lays a $20 bill down on the table and begins to walk away.
All right, then? I call after him. What does that mean? All right, then.
The guy pauses, closing his wallet and stuffing it into his back pocket.
Means I'll see what I can do, he says gruffly. In the meantime, stay the hell away from Weaving. And Lowell, if you can help it. Better for you if you just lock yourself in that big old house and don't come out till spring.
He goes, and with him goes the tension that's been leeching the life and color out of the diner. Next to me, Alex grips hold of the teaspoon in his hand so hard he bends the metal.
What's that saying? He grumbles through his teeth. Better the devil you know? Well, I don't trust any of these shady motherfuckers.
34. Silver.
Don't forget, students, our James Bond Spies and Villains evening is fast approaching. This Friday, dust off your slickest suits and your sparkliest dresses and join in the revelry at Raleigh High's Senior Prom. Tickets will be on sale until Wednesday afternoon. Remember, those of you whose academic records prevent them from attending prom, there's still time to bring up your GPA with some extra credit assignments. Visit your counselor today and...
I smirk as I head down the hallway toward history. Principal Darhauer's assistant, Karen, is usually as quiet as a mouse. She has a hard time making eye contact with you when she speaks to you, and any time she has to deal with a student's parents, she blushes furiously. She sounds like a Good Morning America presenter when she voices the announcements over the new PA system, though. You can practically hear her Hollywood smile being transmitted through the shitty, crackling speakers. A group of guys hover outside Jacob Weaving's locker, even though their hallowed leader is still banished from school grounds, thanks to my father's recent hysterics. All of them members of the football team, they glare hatefully at Alex as he approaches from the opposite direction. He stands almost a foot taller than the other students in the vicinity, who are all bustling, jamming presentation folders and books into their backpacks as they hurry to make it to their first class. My heart skips a little at the gentle upward tilt of Alex's mouth when he sees me. Brushing his thick, wavy hair back out of his eyes, he alters his course so his path will cross mine, and reality seems to shift and bend. I'm never going to get used to this. Never. Alessandro Moretti, somehow, bizarrely, miraculously, amazingly, is mine. He loves me. Him with his smoldering, I'm gonna set your whole damn bed on fire and to hell with the world attitude, and his mind-blowingly handsome face, and his intricate, beautiful artwork that covers his body, all of him is mine. I don't think that's ever going to make sense to me. When I stop in front of him, not giving a shit that we're causing an obstruction to our fellow classmates, or that the football team jocks outside Jacob's locker are still drilling holes into the side of Alex's face, he huffs softly under his breath, allowing the smallest suggestion of a smile to form on his face as he brushes his fingertips over my cheek.
Damn, Parisi. I don't think you're ever gonna stop being the most beautiful thing I've ever laid eyes on,
he murmurs. I lean into his hand, briefly closing my eyes, enjoying the warmth of him just for a second. Funny, I was just thinking the same thing. He hooks his index finger through the belt loop of my jeans at my right hip, tugging me closer to him, close enough that he can dip down and whisper into my ear. His hot breath makes me shiver as it skates over the skin of my neck.
"I'm not beautiful. I'm a handsome bastard, and don't you forget it," he growls.
Goosebumps break out on my arms and over the entire expanse of my back. "Cocky," I accuse, angling my head back just enough that I can make eye contact with him.
"You're very sure of yourself, Mr. Moretti. When the hell did your ego get so damn big anyway?"
His dark eyes glimmer with pleasure as he tugs on my belt loop again, closing the small gap between us so that our bodies are flush.
"The day you agreed to marry me," he whispers. "If a girl as stunning, smart, kind, and brave as you is willing to get hitched to me, then I must be pretty fucking amazing, right?"
I shove him in his chest, laughing.
"Maybe I just pitied you because I knew how heartbroken you'd be if I said no."
"Well, that's true. I would have been fucking devastated if you turned me down," he says.
His eyes are still full of mirth, but his expression becomes a little more serious as he takes me by the hand, pulling me into the little alcove next to a water fountain.
"Seriously, though, Argento, you don't need to follow through on this if you're not ready for it. My mom married Giacomo so quick, she had no idea who he really was."
I hold up a hand, pressing it against his chest, cutting him off before he can wander too far down this road.
"I know exactly who you are, and I want to marry you more than I've ever wanted anything, so stop talking right now before I begin to worry that you don't want me and I have a panic attack, okay?"
Alex leans back against the wall, all 6'3" of him pure muscle, arrogance, and vulnerability, hidden behind a wicked smirk. He works his hands beneath the hem of my t-shirt, his palms burning into my bare skin, as he takes hold of me just above my hips and grips me tightly.
"Does that mean you're gonna go with me to this stupid fucking prom thing then?" he asks.
From his tone, you'd think this was an off-the-cuff remark, but I know Alex. I know that he's probably been stewing on this question ever since he arrived at Raleigh High this morning. He's acting way too casually about the question for it to really be of no concern to him. Trying not to laugh, I marshal my features into a stern expression and look him in the eye.
"I don't know. Senior prom's a big deal. I think you're supposed to make some kind of grand gesture when you ask a girl to be your date to such an auspicious event. You know, jump out of a plane and land on the school field, holding a placard or something."
"You're not serious," Alex deadpans.
"I think Gareth Foster's organizing a flash mob in the cafeteria at lunch for Stacy Jones."
He's gone a little pale.
"I don't really think synchronized dancing is a good idea, Argento. You'd lose all respect for me."
"Maybe you could read a poem about how awesome I am in front of the entire year?"
"Or maybe you're fucking with me," he answers, arching an eyebrow suspiciously. "Seeing as how you'd glue my mouth closed before you'd ever let me do that."
I do laugh now. All right, you got me. No outlandish prom invitations required here.
I think it's safe to say I'll happily be your date to every party and event from here on out until the end of time.
Gotta say, though, I'm surprised you even want to go to prom.
He rolls his eyes dramatically, leaning his head against the wall behind him. "And why is that?"
"Prom goes against everything you stand for." That crooked smile of his makes another appearance. In a heartbeat, he spun me around, pressing my back against the wall, and his lips are mere millimeters away from my own.
Now that the prying eyes of Raleigh High's student body have been blocked out by the tumbling dark waves of his hair, he lets himself smile fully. A cautious, secret smile that feels wonderful pressed against my mouth when he kisses me. He leaves me breathless and stupefied when he inches back a little.
"And what, pray tell, do I stand for, Silver Parisi?"
he whispers. "Nonconformity, anarchy, chaos, mayhem in general."
I reel off the list, still reeling inside my head, too. 50 years down the line, a kiss from this man will still send me spinning out of control. I already know it.
"Looks like you do know me," Alex says quietly. "You're right. I never once thought I'd willingly sign up to go to a high school dance, but you know what, Argento? Prom's normal.
That's a rite of passage for a girl in high school. I don't want you to skip it just because I'm a salty bastard who hates everyone and everything in this world apart from you. You deserve to witness the entire ridiculous spectacle. And, more than anything, you deserve normal. After everything you've been through and all the shit that's still not resolved, you deserve one night where all you have to worry about is what dress you're gonna wear. And if you're gonna be able to dance all night in your skyscraper heels. So yeah, prom. We're doing it. And it's gonna be the best night ever, because I said so. The end.
The end?
Yeah. He nods as if that has sealed the deal and finalized the whole thing. The steely look in his eyes says he'll brook no argument on the matter, which is actually fine by me. I haven't even contemplated prom, even with all of the posters and the notices and the announcements being shoved down our throats at every turn. Actually buying a ticket and attending the event seemed so preposterous that it never crossed my mind. Now that Alex has lodged the seed into my mind, buying a dress and dancing with him in front of everyone and just getting to spend the night together as two teenagers in love? Shit, that sounds pretty spectacular to me.
35. Alex. A shrill blast of the bell signals that class is about to begin, and Silver kisses me quickly before darting off into the crowd. I make it three steps past the row of lockers, heading for the science block, when I notice Xander leaning against the scuffed and scratched metal of a locker door, idly staring at his fingernails. He pretends to start when he notices me standing in front of him. "Fancy seeing you here," he says, beaming. I groan, hurrying past him, but the persistent fucker falls into step alongside me. "If you're about to give me shit for asking my girlfriend to go to prom with me, then don't bother, okay? I'm not embarrassed about it, and there's no point cobbling together any cutting one-liners." "Dude, I'd never mock you for wanting to show Silver a good time. I think it's highly commendable that you want to take her to prom. I was thinking about asking our lovely Billie Holiday to go with me, for your information." I don't think Halliday'd be stoked about your using her stripper name outside of the Rock, man. "Duly noted. Duly noted. You're completely right. That wasn't cool. I'd take it back." Xander spins to avoid a gaggle of freshman girls who are loitering at the bottom of the stairwell, staring at us with eyes the size of saucers. "If I was about to admit that I'd accidentally overheard your conversation, you were eavesdropping, Hawk." I thunder up the stairs. "If I was about to admit that I was eavesdropping on your conversation with Silver, then the whole prom invitation would hardly be the most surprising element of whatever I had or hadn't overheard now, would it?" Xander muses. I pause mid-step, turning around to face him. Suddenly, I realize why he's following me like a lost fucking dog. He heard our conversation. He overheard all of it. Fuck. Xander grins, slapping me on the shoulder. "I'd say congratulations, but from what I've seen of the holy order of matrimony, commiserations might be more appropriate. Still, what the hell? I say go for it. Follow your hearts and your hormones and all that other weird shit. Now, have you thought about dates, venues, themes? I'm gonna need as much information as possible." Horror courses through every inch of my body. This is a fucking nightmare. No one was supposed to know about this, not yet anyway, and especially not Xander. "Why the hell would you need as much information as possible?" I ask in a worried tone, worried because I already know the answer. A broad smile splits his face apart. "Well, how the hell am I supposed to perform my duties as best man if I'm left out of the loop?"
36. Silver. It's tough to concentrate in history. I mentally cycle through my wardrobe, weighing the pros and cons of every single dress I own before coming to the conclusion that I need to buy something new for the occasion. A year ago, I wouldn't have bothered panicking over my clothing options. It would have been a futile exercise. Casey would have monopolized all the siren's time, making us give her feedback on the dresses she picked out for herself. Once she'd selected the perfect little number that hugged her curves and emphasized her tits, she'd have picked out our dresses for the rest of us. Dresses that were still nice and still worked well for our body types, but that were also not quite right somehow. A little too long, or a little too tight, or a little too gaudy. It was our job as Casey's minions to make sure our shortcomings highlighted just how perfect she was by comparison. With Casey now gone, the knowledge that I can wear whatever the fuck I want is a dizzying breath of fresh air. Class ends, and I'm still floating in a daze as I traipse out into the hallway. I'm so distracted by prom plans that I don't register what I'm seeing for a second. It's the awkward silence that's pressing down on the hallway that initially brings me back into myself, and then it's the weird way that all of the other kids in the hallway are all looking in the same direction, their bodies angled toward the same focal point. Next to the door that leads to Raleigh's south exit, Zen McReady stands, staring down at her feet, clutching a folder to her chest. It looks like she's trying to use the binder as some sort of shield to fend off the incredulous, suspicious glares of her former subjects. Once upon a time, you could spot Zen a mile away by her hair, either in a teased-out afro or braids or some wild, outlandish color. Zen's hair always made her stand out from the crowd, courtesy of the catfight she had with Rose Jimenez outside the front of school. Her hair is all gone now, though. The red beret she's wearing obviously covers the top of her head, but it can't hide the shaved sides of her head. Timidly, she pushes away from the wall, navigating a pathway through the frozen forms of our classmates, her eyes diligently glued to the floor.
"Bitch," someone hisses under their breath. A male voice. A voice filled with malevolence.
"Whore."
"Lying cunt."
A wall of heat rises from the pit of my belly. It begins as a small flame of anger licking at my insides, but quickly my temper fans that flame and it becomes a roaring inferno, raging through every part of me. This should not be allowed to stand. Day after day I endured this kind of treatment and nobody did anything about it, just like they are now. The guys and girls I grew up with stand by and observed as I was humiliated and publicly shamed. Well, I won't stand amongst them. Not today. Not ever. Quickly, I break through the forming crowd and slip my arm through Zen's. Her automatic response is to flinch at the contact. When she looks up and sees who's dared to take her by the arm, however, her fear subsides.
"Silver, you don't... I don't expect you to..."
She gropes for the right words, but I already know perfectly well what she wants to say to me. "I know. I don't have to stand up for you. I shouldn't have to, either. I reckon I've been dealt enough abuse to last a lifetime. But that's the whole point, isn't it? No one should have to deal with this shit. And what kind of hypocrite would I be if I stood by and let these assholes do this to someone else?" Zen gives me a weak, broken smile. She's sorry. I know she's sorrier than she's ever been before in her life. Now that she's experienced just how foul this kind of treatment tastes, she knows what it must have been like for me to endure it day after day, week after week, and she doesn't like it one little bit.
"I want to be invisible," she whispers, so softly only I can hear her. "I just want to be no one. I just want to disappear."
How many times did I say that exact same thing to myself? I couldn't count that high if I tried. It was all I repeated to myself inside my head for months. That desperate wish seared itself into my very soul. I smile sadly as I take a deep breath and begin to guide Zen down the hallway.
"If you become a ghost, they win," I tell her. "If you make yourself small for them, it'll never be enough. They'll demand that you make yourself smaller and smaller still, and they'll cheer you on as you do it. You can't hand over victory to them like that. You have to raise your head, lift your jaw, look them in the eyes, and tell them no, Zen."
"I did tell them no."
Zen's voice breaks. She's referring to Jake, Sam, and Killian, and the night they assaulted her on the concrete beside the Weavings family swimming pool. The cops showed me the photos of Zen trying to fight the boys off when I was in the hospital. I witnessed the fear on her face. I saw how hard she was trying to fight them off. She probably screamed, "No, stop!" until her throat was raw and bleeding. Her panic must have excited Jacob and his monstrous friends to the point of frenzied madness. Just because it's hard doesn't mean you can ever stop saying it's Zen. It might be easier to just give in, shut your mouth, lie down, and let the wolves pick over what's left of you. Do that, and it'll be so much harder to get back up again, though. These assholes on the football team are never going to let up if they think you're weak. You stand up to them, and you take their power away from them. Zen doesn't look cheered by my instructions, but she makes an effort to stand a little taller. She even lifts her gaze from the floor, though she stares straight ahead, doing everything in her power to avoid making eye contact with anyone. People begin to turn away, shuffling off in different directions, heading for their next classes. Three guys grouped together on the left-hand side of the hallway stay firmly put, though. I don't really know them at all, but I know their names. Kyle Brading, Lawrence Davis, Nassim Khatri. They're part of the Jacob Weaving is God fan club, founding members, if memory serves, and from the cuts and scrapes on their faces, they're also amongst the football players who tussled with Alex and Xander recently. Kyle leers at Zen as we walk by them, eyeing her loose sweatshirt like she's actually wearing provocative lingerie.
Damn, McReady. I always knew you were smoking, but shit. Jake showed us those shots of you on his phone. I nearly came in my pants on the spot. Ain't no point in hiding away those luscious curves now, girl. We all seen what you working with.
Zen digs her fingernails into my arm, her body tensing.
Ignore him, I whisper.
She tries to quicken our pace, urging me to hurry forward, but I hold her back. I make her walk at an easy, regular speed, refusing to give Kyle or his friends the satisfaction of watching Zen scurry off afraid.
God, this was a mistake, Zen mutters, her voice riddled with anxiety. I shouldn't have pushed to come back to school so quickly. Mom said this was a stupid idea, but I wouldn't listen.
Last time I saw Zen, she was laid out on a hospital bed, tagged and drugged, and it didn't seem like she was close to being released anytime soon. Clearly, I was wrong. There's a story here. I have a lot of questions. I don't even know how to broach the topic of her pregnancy, but it's going to have to wait for another time. Right now, all that matters is that we get out of here without her breaking down in front of the football team.
You did the right thing. It's going to be okay. Come on. Let's just get you to class.
Zen's shaking from head to toe as we walk past the guys. We're successfully past them, and I'm beginning to think we're free and clear of their bullshit. For now. When something hits me in the shoulder, really hard. Dark brown liquid showers all over the place, soaking my shirt and my hair, drenching Zen at the same time. It splashes in her face, running down her neck and soaking into the collar of her sweatshirt. For a horrible second, I worry about what kind of liquid we've both just been soaked with. I saw on the news that a woman in LA was recently attacked and had a bucket of piping hot diarrhea dumped over her head. But then I see the dented Coke can on the floor at our feet, still spraying fizzed up soda out of its partially cracked opening, and I'm overcome with relief.
It's just Coke, Silver. It's okay. It's just Coke.
The thankful reassurance that I play out in my head quickly morphs into something angrier, though.
They threw a can of Coke at you, Silver. They threw a can of fucking Coke at you.
Ah, sorry, ladies. Didn't see you there. I was aiming for the trash can, Nassim jeers. Don't worry, though. There are plenty of witnesses around. No need to go running to Darhauer and crying rape or anything.
I see red. I don't really see anything at all. One second, I'm helping Zen dab the soda from her face and her shirt, and the next, I'm flying across the hallway lifting my fist. Suddenly, a menacing roar fills the corridor, and I'm no longer standing on my own two feet. I'm being lifted in the air, spun around, set back down again. And Alex is hurling himself at the group of football players. It all happens so quickly. A startled scream splits the air behind me. People collide into one another in their desperate attempts to get out of the way. Kyle looks stunned for a split second before he's lifted from his feet and Alex has him pinned against the wall.
Alex, no!
My shout goes unheard. Alex pulls back his fist and I watch as he drives it forward in slow motion, slamming it into Kyle's face. A dull crack fills the air, and Kyle's head makes contact with the wall behind him. That's when Lawrence and Nassim seem to realize that there are more of them than there are of Alex,
and they fall on him, pulling at his shirt, dragging him off their friend. I can only watch, horrified, as the three jocks tear into Alex. It's simple math, 3 against 1. My boyfriend stands to get his ass kicked. Kyle seems a little dazed as he throws a punch at Alex and misses. Lawrence has better aim. His fist makes contact with Alex's jaw. Nassim plays it safe and lands a winding punch to Alex's gut. It seems, fleetingly, that Alex is about to hit the deck, but when I see the fury on his face, it becomes clear that that just isn't going to happen. Alex isn't the type of guy to go down in a fight. He's the type of guy who'll doggedly remain on his feet, no matter how hard he's hit, until someone rings his bell hard enough for him to lose consciousness. I don't want it to get that far, though. The last thing I want to see is Alex knocked out on the ground. Hey! I step forward, but Zen grabs my wrist, preventing me from getting too close to the melee. The three jocks are oblivious to me. Alex isn't. The whites of his eyes show as he finds me amongst the madness, and his steely warning drills into me.
Don't come any closer, Argento. Keep back.
Kyle hits Alex square on the jaw. He shakes his head as if he can shrug out of the pain and the disorientation. It doesn't look like it works, though. With Lawrence and Nassim now holding Alex by either arm, an already shitty situation begins to look even worse. Kyle staggers back, grunting as he hefts back his arm, swinging for Alex's face. Oh God, come on, please no. How many times do I have to watch the guy I love being hurt because of me? I flinch, my breath lodged in the back of my throat, alongside another pleading cry. I can't work it free. It's jammed there, unable to get out. Kyle lurches drunkenly, too far away to land his punch. As Alex wrenches himself free of Lawrence's grasp, in a predatory, swift movement, he dips, pivots his hips, rises again, and grabs Lawrence by the side of the head. The crowd sucks in a communal breath as Alex digs his fingers into the other guy's shaggy hair, reels him in, and then smashes his head into the lockers. Holy shit, Zen hisses. Did you see that? His eyes rolled back into his head. He's out cold. Sure enough, Lawrence is out cold. His eyes are open, staring up at the ceiling. Kyle and Nassim exchange a glance that spells trouble. They're outraged that Alex has KO'd their boy. Nassim steps forward first. The hallway suddenly becomes stifling hot. It's as though the walls are pressing in on all sides. Smirking like this entire fight has boiled down to this moment, Nassim eyes Alex like he's about to give him a taste of his own medicine. My boyfriend laughs softly under his breath, eyeing him dubiously, though.
One more step, Nas. Just one more.
And what? You can't take me and Kyle, asshole. Jesus, you really do think you're God's gift, don't you?
Alex answers with a subtle twitch of his mouth. It's as close as he's ever going to get to smiling in front of Nassim.
You were warned. One step closer and you'll...
Nassim steps forward. In a blur of arms and smudged black clothing, Alex flies at him. Nassim braces, ducking a little to take the brunt of Alex's weight as he crashes into him, but he's massively underestimated Alex's strength. He goes down. Alex grabs the front of his shirt, pulling the guy off the ground to meet his fist, which he pulls back and unleashes again and again, until the asshole falls limp, his head lolling back.
Darhauer! A girl cries on the far side of the knot of people. Darhauer's coming! Get the fuck out of here!
The crowd breaks, scattering like a bunch of cockroaches across a kitchen floor. Students flee in every direction, tripping over one another, pushing each other out of the way as they attempt to distance themselves from the fight. Alex lowers his fist. He also drops Nassim, letting him fall to the blood-streaked linoleum beneath his feet. Curses under his breath, Kyle braces himself against the locker door beside him. Looks like he's still winded from the very first hit Alex landed on him.
Go on, and get to class, Silver,
Alex says grimly, clenching his jaw.
What the? Of all the ridiculous things he could say to me right now, this tops the charts. I'm not going anywhere, neither Zen. We'll tell Principal...
His nostrils flare. Shaking his head, he steps over Nassim and gently tugs me toward the rear exit of the building, urging me to move.
Come on, Argento. If Darhauer's shitty to you, even remotely shitty, then I'm gonna lose my temper and hit the fucker.
This is already bad enough as it is. What the hell is going on?
Fuck. Too late. Principal Darhauer's enraged voice booms down the hallway as he draws closer. Sounds like he's already clocked the two kids lying on the floor, and Kyle leaning awkwardly against the lockers, with Alex and me standing right in the middle of the carnage. It's too late to go sneaking off now, even if I wanted to. I turn just in time for Darhauer to arrive. He places his hands on his hips, pushing his suit jacket back, disbelief etched into the lines of his face.
Heaven help me, but I thought this week was gonna be it, he huffs. This week I figured things would be normal, for once. Quiet even. Ha!
His small snatch of laughter makes me jump.
I'm delusional. What is it? What's the saying?
He clicks his fingers, urging the phrase he's looking for to reveal itself to him.
Repeating the same act over and over and expecting a different result? That's the definition of madness. Well, I must be out of my fucking mind because I really did, once again, let myself believe that you two weren't going to cause any more trouble. Yet here we are, again.
Alex was defending us, Zen says, stepping forward. Her voice sounds strong. Her attitude, the way she set her jaw and is looking Darhauer dead in the eye, is night and day from the anxious, scared demeanor she was rocking not 5 minutes ago. These idiots threw a can of soda at us. They were threatening us, Zen announces, everything about her tight and controlled. I was scared, you know, for the baby.
Whoa, what the fuck?
Did she just say that out loud? I jerk back, startled by Zen's statement. I'm not the only one surprised by what she's just said either. Darhauer pales, his cheeks turning ashen white. I can only imagine the looks on the faces of the students around us who didn't run, because I can't tear my eyes away from the man in the wrinkled suit standing 5 feet away. Principal Darhauer's mouth opens and closes a number of times before he breaks eye contact with Zen and looks briefly down at his feet while he gathers himself. He wasn't expecting her to bring up the fact that she's pregnant. Not in a hallway full of people. I wasn't expecting her to bring it up either. Darhauer kneads the back of his neck, pressing his fingertips into his skin like he's attempting to ease a sudden pinched nerve. When he looks back up, he's wearing a tight, unfriendly smile.
You know what? I should suspend the lot of you. Send you home and demand your parents do something about this mayhem. It'd be a complete waste of time, though, wouldn't it? You're like goddamn wolves. I can't handle a second more of this, I swear. Miss McReady, get yourself to the nurse's station and get yourself checked out. We wouldn't want any harm to have come to your baby. Once she's finished, you three idiots drag your asses over there and get seen too. Lawrence Davis, were you unconscious just now?
Lawrence has woken up and has gotten to his feet while Darhauer's been ranting.
No, he lies, shaking his head blearily. I was fine. I was just... Don't even bother. Just make sure you don't have a concussion, and then get the hell to your next class.
You can practically see the fumes billowing out of his nose as he turns his attention to Alex and me.
You were so sweet and easy when you were a freshman, Silver. I swear to God, puberty is a curse sent from the gods to punish me, specifically. And you, he says, narrowing his eyelids to slits as he considers Alex. The day you were foisted onto this school was a bad day indeed. Honestly, I literally pray at night that you all graduate with flying colors, purely so there'll be no chance of you repeating your senior year. At this rate, I'll be in an early grave before June. Get out of my sight.
Alex arches a cool eyebrow at the principal, his dark eyes sharper than razors.
No suspension? No threats? He asks. Don't you want to finally expel me from the school?
That is what Darhauer's wanted for a very long time. This, right here, is plenty of cause to expel Alex from Raleigh, and Maeve wouldn't be able to save his ass this time. Darhauer's lip curls up.
I've learned the hard way that getting rid of you isn't as easy as it sounds. Enjoy prom. Enjoy what's left of your senior year. Just do me a favor and keep the hell out of my way, boy.
37. Alex. You're expected to look smart in court, but I've stood before judges and juries in a t-shirt and jeans every single time I've been dragged up onto a dock. I haven't given a single fuck about the impression I'm supposed to give them. Those uptight stiffs perched on their benches heard the charges against me and immediately made their decisions about me and the kind of person I was. In their eyes, I was a criminal, a waste of space, a piece of shit that didn't deserve to share the same oxygen as them. I always knew that a collared shirt and a tie wouldn't do much to sway them when it came down to it, and so I dressed accordingly. No sense in being uncomfortable for nothing. Tonight marks the very first time I've ever worn a suit. It's black and tailored, and the woman in the store cooed over me like a fucking psychopath when I tried it on in the store. She told me I was the most handsome guy she'd ever fitted. Yet all the while, she made sure to avoid looking at the ink that covers half of my body, fussing nervously around the tie clips and the cufflinks, watching me out of the corner of her eye like I was about to burn the place down to the ground with her still inside the building. I straighten out the thin black pencil tie I just fastened around my neck, and for a moment, the guy staring back at me from the bathroom mirror doesn't look like me at all. He looks like someone who might have a promising future ahead of him. I can see him accomplishing lofty goals and making something of himself, and that is frightening as fuck, because failing is easy. Being the guy everyone expects me to be, that tearaway thug who will never amount to anything but trouble, is the path of least resistance. Working to be better, to be more, is a much harder path to walk. If I convince people I'm a good man, there's a solid chance that at some point I'll actually end up letting them down. And that possibility, especially where Silver's concerned, is unacceptable. Then don't let her down, asshole, I tell the guy looking back at me in the mirror. Give her the life she deserves. Keep her safe and never, ever hurt her. I already know I'm not gonna hurt her. I might not be the perfect husband, but fuck me if I don't damn near kill myself trying to be. For her. I walk away from the mirror feeling like I've entered into some kind of contract with the promise of the man I might become, and I feel strangely optimistic about the whole thing. As tradition dictates, Cameron opens the door to the Parisi household. I've knocked, even though I'm perfectly comfortable with walking through the front door unannounced these days. It's prom night, and I want Silver to get the whole experience. Wouldn't have been right if she didn't hear the boy who asked her to be his date arriving on the doorstep as she checked her hair and straightened out her dress.
Mr. Bond, I presume, Cam says, putting on a thick, nondescript Eastern European accent.
He waggles his eyebrows as he looks me up and down.
Prepare to die. Mwahaha.
I don't think any of the Bond villains were vampires, old man, I tell him, skirting past him into the hallway. You ever even seen a Bond movie? He holds his arms over his chest, arching an eyebrow at me suspiciously, like this is a trick question.
No. You?
I shake my head, laughing softly. Guess I haven't.
We should probably rectify that. Have a movie marathon or something. I don't think we count as real men until we've at least seen the Connery years.
I lean back against the wall next to the mail stand. You asking me on a date? 'Cause you should know I'm already seeing someone.
Ha ha, very droll.
He clears his throat, his expression turning serious.
I'm supposed to tell you to have my daughter home by midnight now, and tell you to keep your hands to yourself. Seems a little futile now, since she already agreed to marry your sorry ass. You should still keep your hands to yourself, though.
He adds on the end,
I don't condone your hands anywhere near my daughter, just so we're clear. If it were up to me, neither of you would be allowed to make physical contact of any kind until you're both at least 30.
God, Dad, please stop talking. Silver's standing at the top of the stairs. It's an undeniably cliche moment. Cameron giving me his fucked up, messy version of the talk while I wait by the door for the girl of my dreams to appear. But fuck it. I don't give a shit, because Silver looks like she is a dream. Her hair's loose and wavy, styled to look like it hasn't been styled at all. She's wearing hardly any makeup, maybe just a touch of mascara and some lip gloss, and she looks fresh and vibrant. And her dress. It hits me that I've never seen Silver in a dress before. She lives in her jeans and t-shirts just like I do. The little black number she's wearing isn't your typical prom dress. It's a little edgy and short, and the long expanse of her legs instantly makes my dick hard. Awkward, since Cam's standing 4 feet away. The shoulders and the top of the dress that covers her cleavage is made of some kind of lace that sparkles and catches at the light as she hesitantly begins to come down the stairs. "What do you think?" she asks, running her hands over the material. "Beautiful, beautiful," Cam and I say at the same time. We look at each other, and Silver's father coughs uncomfortably, clearing his throat.
"Right. Screw you guys for growing up and leaving me here at home on my own. I'm gonna get the camera."
"No, Jesus, Dad. We don't need embarrassing prom photos. We're both covered in bruises."
"We are, too. They're fading fast. A few of mine are fresher than others, but you can still see them if you look close enough. Cam doesn't give a shit, though." Yeah, you have to have embarrassing photos taken. How else am I gonna remind you how dumb you looked in 30 years when fashions have changed and everyone's wearing bell bottoms again?
He ducks into his office and Silver races down the remaining steps, grabbing hold of me by the suit jacket. "Come on, let's bail before he manages to find the Polaroid." I scoop her off her feet, holding her up against me for a moment, placing a long, smoldering kiss on her lips. No tongue. I just hold her, lingering as I enjoy the sensation of her pliant lips until she begins to melt against me. I love kissing this girl so fucking much. Each and every kiss I steal from her is a gift I don't deserve. Cameron clatters, dropping something in the office, and his hissed, "Shit!" echoes out into the hallway. I release Silver, settling her back on her feet, pleased with the fact that her pupils are so blown they've almost swallowed her irises, and she looks dazed as hell. I know I have an effect on her, but witnessing it with my own two eyes makes me inordinately smug. God, she's so fucking beautiful. It feels like my insides are on fire. With a light touch, I skim the palm of my hand over her hair, humming softly under my breath. "Let's give him the moment, Argento. He's your dad. He should play his role in this whole prom debacle just like we do." "Eh, fine." She pretends to be annoyed, but a pleased light dances in her eyes. I think she loves the fact that I consider Cam from time to time. He bursts back out of his office, brandishing a DSLR like a weapon, as if he knows his daughter was planning on making a run for it.
"Stand by the painting," he orders. "And I know this is gonna be painful for both of you, okay, but I'm gonna need you both to smile."
Once the obligatory modeling shoot's over with, "Yes, we both smiled," Cam lets us leave. Silver gasps when she hits the end of the path that leads to the turning circle in front of the house and sees our ride for the evening. "Alex, what the hell have you done?" Shrugging, I suddenly feel out of sorts.
"I thought about renting a limo for the evening and having someone drive us to the school, but I couldn't make myself do it. So Cam gave me the keys to the Nova and, well..."
I gesture to her car, as if the sight of it alone is all the explanation she needs. The gleaming new cherry red paint job speaks for itself. She can't see the brand new chromed out engine block from here, though, or the newly upholstered leather seats.
"Oh my God, Alex. This is..."
Silver covers her mouth as she heads for a closer inspection. She bends, marveling at the new interior, shaking her head.
"This must have taken you forever."
I grunt, kicking the toe of my new polished shoes against the curb. "Hate to admit it, but Xander might have helped out, just a little. They make TV shows about car restorations like this. Xander and I worked way faster than any of those hacks could have. We didn't eat, and we didn't sleep. We went through a couple of cases of PBR afterward, but that didn't count."
"I love it," Silver whispers.
"You're not sad that we got rid of the black?"
"No way. The red is to die for."
"So, you're telling me you want to take this thing for a test spin? Or would my queen like me to chauffeur her to the ball?"
"Are you kidding me, Moretti? Give me those keys. I'm driving."
Silver. I'm still spinning out over the car when we walk into Raleigh High. The whole school has been decked out and decorated with silver, gold, and black balloons all over the place. Karen, Principal Darhauer's assistant, is dressed in a sparkling blue floor-length gown that's transformed her from dowdy admin worker to glamorous Bond girl. I almost can't believe she's the same woman. She ushers the arriving students into the gymnasium, taking our tickets and telling us to line up for the school photographer, who's taking shots of everyone in front of a huge black-and-white shutter design, one of the most iconic James Bond images ever created. Students stand in the open circle, back-to-back with their dates, making finger guns and posing goofily as their pictures are taken. Thankfully, Alex sees the look on my face and leads me right past the whole mess, guiding me to the punch table.
"Doubt it's been spiked yet," he says morosely. "Still, you want some?"
He fills up a red solo cup for me, pouring one for himself, too. Xander arrives before either of us have managed to taste and see if anyone has covertly added any tequila.
"This party sucks," he announces,
pulling unhappily at the black tie around his neck. He's wearing a suit that rivals Alex's, also black, with a slight metallic blue sheen to it. He almost looks as handsome as the guy standing next to me. Almost.
"The music's terrible. They've already played Diamonds Are Forever 1,000 fucking times. They're gonna run out of Bond theme songs before 10 at this rate."
The gym's packed with kids in over-the-top dresses and suits of every color and style. By one of the massive PA speakers, Micah Williams is wearing a pale gray suit and a bald cap, with a stuffed white cat jammed firmly under his arm. Obviously, he chose the villain route and came dressed as Blofeld. My respect for him triples on sight.
"Some of the jocks have been hitting rails in the bathroom. There was a fight in the parking lot. One of your fellow cheerleaders broke a heel, Silver, and Darhauer kicked a couple out for fucking in the janitor's closet. You guys haven't missed much. I'm feeling a little robbed. Bellingham's prom would have been far more exciting than this snooze fest." "If you transferred back there like I told you to, you could have gone," Alex reminds him.
Xander pulls a face.
"Graduating from Raleigh looks a lot better on college applications. And besides, you would have missed me too much."
For once, Alex doesn't volley a snarky retort back at him. He sighs heavily instead.
"Where's Halliday? How should I know?" Because she's your date," Alex replies.
I still can't believe Xander asked Hal to come to prom with him. I definitely can't believe she said yes. Under Casey's rule, Halliday would never have agreed to come to a major school event with a guy like Xander. Goes to show how much things have changed around here.
Fine, you're right. I should probably go find her. She's so fucking hot tonight. She's probably got 8 guys hitting on her right now anyway. Maybe I'll have to defend her honor and knock a few of them out."
He sounds way too excited by the prospect. On our own again, Alex offers me his hand as the song changes to something upbeat and bouncy. "Oh boy, you want to dance?" I ask. He's devilishly handsome as he smirks, slowly shaking his head.
"I only have one dance in me, Argento, and I'm saving it for another day. No, I want to steal you away for a second, if that's all right with you."
His dark eyes burn into me like brands, intense and fierce, and my heart backflips. Jesus Christ, the way he looks at me is too fucking much. "Lead the way." There are chaperones guarding the fire escape at the back of the gym, so we have to lie to Miss Gilchrist and tell her we're heading to the bathroom in order to leave. Before I know it, Alex has set off at a jog, laughing, dragging me along behind him down the hallway. When we arrive at his locker, he places his hands on my shoulders, positioning me so that my back's up against the cool metal. It's much calmer here. Gentle strains of music from the gym float down the corridor, but it's quiet enough that I can feel my own pulse thundering in my ears. I never thought I'd get to have this. Prom was a rite of passage I thought I wasn't going to get to experience. After everything that's gone down over the past year, I assumed I'd be boycotting the night, curled up on the sofa at home in my sweats, shoving popcorn into my face as I watched a movie while everyone else partied the night away. Alex made this possible, though. He made me want to come here tonight, to be by his side. He's made prom perfect. Close your eyes, Parisi, he says, dipping down to bury his face in the crook of my neck for a moment. His hot breath skates over my skin, and the back of my neck breaks out in goosebumps. Shit, Alex. I close my eyes, reveling in the feel of him pressing up against my body. I want him to kiss me properly. I need his mouth on mine, his hands on my naked flesh. If Darhauer hadn't already booted a couple out for screwing on school property, I'd be trying to find the closest janitor's closet myself right now. Alex looks so good in his suit that my immediate response is to try and get him out of it. He pulls away, taking his heat with him, and I ache from the lack of him. To my right, I hear the ticking of a combination lock being opened, and then the creak of his locker door as he opens it up. Silence follows. I can't even hear him breathing. Alex?
I ask you to marry me in a diner, Argento. A fucking diner. I asked you without a ring, because I couldn't hold back a second longer. And I felt pretty terrible about that ever since. So, no, wait, not yet. Keep them close.
He laughs shakily, an adorable, vulnerable sound.
Cameron gave this to me a while ago, and I've been waiting to give it to you.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. He's giving me a ring? My cheeks flame, blood rushing to my face. I can't even think straight. I need to open my eyes. I have to open them. As if he can sense that I'm losing my battle to obey him, Alex places a hand over my eyes, blocking out my vision.
I wasn't waiting for the right moment, he whispers.
Jesus, his mouth is so damn close. I can feel the brush of his lips.